Welcome back to Mornings. Julian DeStoop with you. Plenty happening in the world of football, particularly with our national teams. The Matildas have made a great start to the Asian Cup, and the Socceroos desperately need a win in their World Cup qualifier against Vietnam on Thursday night at Amy Park. So what a great time to check in with the face, the voice of football on Network 10 and Paramount, the great Andy Harper. Morning, Andy.
Jules, how are you, mate? Happy New Year.
You too. Where do we find you? On the road? Where are you off to?
I'm on the M1 Pacific Highway heading north home from Sydney.
Oh, beautiful. Now, before we get stuck into the Socceroos and the Matildas, victory versus Sydney, we're just chalked down three points here for victory, top of the table. Your old mob aren't even in the top six. This should be pretty straightforward for victory, shouldn't it?
Well, firstly, I don't know. It's a pretty long historical bow you're drawing to call Sydney my old mob, but anyway, fair enough. all the form suggests, and I'm not going to argue with it, Melbourne victory in great nick. What a superb turnaround from the shock of last season, the last couple of seasons, into this year with Tony Popovich. So good on them, and our red-hot favourites for tonight.
Well, what have you made of Sydney's start to the season? We've just expected Sydney in recent years to be up top of the table, around about the mark, but it's been a bit of a stuttering start. Concerns, or do you think they're eventually going to come good?
I think they'll come good, but it depends on, Jules, what your view on good is, what your measure for good is. I think, they've been hit by injury, probably no more or less than other teams, but they've been the players that haven't been able to come back. It's been telling. It's an ageing squad as well, and they've built their success in recent years with a core of extreme quality and a lot of experience. But, of course, people don't get younger. They just get older, and I think that's bitten a little bit. There's a bit of staleness around the place, and they've struggled, and it compounds itself, doesn't it? You know, you get on a momentum in either direction, positive or negative, has a compounding effect, and it can be hard to change. And I just think that's where Sydney are at the moment. It's not a reflection of the individual quality of the players, but it's a reflection of the negative momentum at the moment. How they change that is a big ask, because you look at the alternative in Melbourne victory, they've got comparatively fantastically positive momentum, and the two go clashing tonight, and you can only see one outcome, really.
Is it just too early to get a guide on this season? We haven't played that many matches, but it's been so interrupted. Some teams have hardly played. Some teams have played them pretty much as many matches as we would have expected by now. How long is it going to take before it settles down and we can actually make some, you know, honest assessments of how teams are going?
Well, I don't know if you're going to be fair to people, Jules, if you can make an honest assessment at all. And it's not just about the number of games played or not played. It's underneath the bonnet of the playing squads themselves and how badly physically they might have been affected by COVID. So, obviously, because of the postponements, we know that there's been a raft of players, and we're led to believe the majority of the league has had to deal with a COVID infection. And as you know, across the community, some people have COVID without knowing it, and some people get it real bad with the ultimate fact that's not safe for players yet. What we do know, they've come back. We don't know who it is, but they've come back into the full-time training and playing environment, and there are a collection of players who are finding it really difficult to hit the physical markers post-COVID compared to pre-COVID. Now, we're not privy to that information, and nor should we be. But it lingers, and it makes it really difficult to know what to expect of teams, which players have been unduly hit or severely hit by their own COVID experience and found it difficult to bounce back, and which ones haven't. And so on that basis, it's I don't know if we can actually through this season, and I don't know what the footy codes are going to do, because they'll confront the same thing when winter comes around.
And speaking of COVID, we're speaking to Andy Harper about all things in the world of football. Graham Arnold has got it, and therefore he's not going to be on the sideline on Thursday night when the Socceroos take on Vietnam. I hope this doesn't sound like a dumb question, but is that a significant factor in the game? Should it make any difference, the fact that Graham Arnold isn't there? What sort of impact does that have on a team?
I think it has a big impact. You know, to varying degrees, the coach is the biggest person. It's the leader of any particular sporting team. Some coaches fill more of that space than others. But the fact of the matter is, certainly in football, because, you know, you don't have interchange options. You've got to stick with your first instinct with a starting 11. And having that coach, in this case Graham Arnold, isolated from the team, it doesn't stop the flow of information, him to players and him to his assistant coaches. But what you lose, is the presence of the coach in the first instance. And that means, you know, the whole business of this qualifying campaign has been built around the persona of Graham Arnold and the values and standards he's wanted to run the organisation by. Now, players in any sport, Jules, they are a liquid form. They're not a solid form. Mm. Players flow to the cracks. And I'm not saying this is the case with the Socceroos. I'm just saying this is a general principle. You take a coach out of that scenario who's built that environment, and inevitably there will be the space created by the coach's removal. Attitudes will flow to those spaces and cracks that become apparent. Potentially, that can be disruptive. The closer to home, however, is what you lose is the coach's game before, a day before or game day instinct about how the players are ready, you know, in the dining room the night before the game, in the breakfast hall, walking around the recreation room. That's when a coach starts to feel the vibe of a player who might be up for it and might not be. It might even go as far as to say the coach changes his decision on a starting 11. It might be that he takes a particular player aside on game day and just says, you know, senses there's something not quite right and maybe refocuses that player. You lose that instinct of the great coaches if they're not allowed to be there. And that's the hurdle that the Socceroos might have to overcome in this Vietnam preparation.
Now, that's a really interesting way of looking at it, Andy. I guess, geez, we hope they're sharp because there's not much margin for error. We're not cruising in this qualifying campaign, and no disrespect to Vietnam, but this is a game we just have to get the 3 points because there's some big, big games just around the corner.
Mate, not only not disrespect Vietnam, we have to take into consideration that they're a way better team than 0 points from their 6 games so far. Way better. They've got some really tricky little players. They've been hard to beat. They've got a series of single goal losses, which speaks to how competitive they are. And indeed, excuse me, the Australian game versus Vietnam first time round in Hanoi, in front of an empty stadium, thankfully. If that had 50 or 60,000 fans, that might have been a different situation for the Socceroos to confront. As it was, they found beating Vietnam 1-0 that day very, very tricky. And on balance, and in retrospect, Vietnam had probably a series of better chances to score goals on breakaways than the Socceroos had. So it will be a difficult match. And we need 6 points from these two games because, by definition, if we don't knock off Oman, then they'll have at least held water against us with the Japan and Saudi games to come to finish off the qualifying group for us. The two enormously difficult games. And if Oman are still in the hunt, then that makes that third place game even more pressurised. But we need to get into the top two to avoid the doubt. I mean, I don't think any Socceroo fans want to revisit that rippercharge rollercoaster of playoff matches. It's shocking for your heart rate.
It's not good. No, we've all been through that before. Are you confident they can get themselves into the top two?
Yeah.
I mean, Archie Thompson said yesterday on this station he believes this is probably the weakest Socceroo squad we've had for quite some time. But are you still confident they'll be top two, or are you concerned that we're going to have to go through this rollercoaster after finishing third?
Well, I'm both. Of course, I'm concerned that might be the fate. But I'm confident this group can navigate what's in front of them. You have to be, and there's no reason not to believe in them. But there is the concern. That's the pressure of this. There's nothing guaranteed. Up against good opponents, Oman away are going to be... that's a different proposition again. Then we turn for home against the Saudis, who are a mile ahead, 5 points clear as we speak, and Japan, against whom recently we've found almost impossible to beat. So the job's got to be done in these next two games. Then we can refocus. I don't want to have to go into the Japan-Saudi games needing maximum points, put it that way.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. And just before we let you go, Andy, Matildas 4-0 last night, 18-0 a couple of nights ago. Obviously, there's some the bigger challenges to come. I guess probably on the back of those two games, it's hard to get a guide how they're going to go when they come up against some of the really big teams later in this tournament.
Yeah, I totally agree. And how big are the bigger teams in Asia? I'm not quite sure. It's hard to get a form line on even Japan, the most difficult opponent for us in Asian qualifying. But, you know, I'm looking at the Matildas under Tony Gustafsson. It's had 18 games now. and is largely stuck to a really experienced core of players, many of whom we know very, very well. And I'm struggling to see the progress, Jules. I'm struggling to see it. And it's one thing to navigate the early rounds of the Asian Cup. My view on this has always been the focus, even the Olympic Games of Tokyo 2020, although they were played in 2021. My focus of this, now that we've got hosting rights for the 2023 World Cup with the Kiwis, that is the target. The Asian Cup for me is not a target.
Yep.
The Asian Cup for me is part of the process. And I'm not seeing the development that's needed. Because when the World Cup comes and we're hosts, and because it'll be a 32-team competition, by definition, there'll be some pretty weak teams comparatively there. The Matildas more than likely would easily navigate their group in a top two position. But once they're up against the big teams, the US and the big teams out of Europe, Jules, I'm not seeing the progress under this coach that gives me confidence on home turf with the nation behind them that the team's going to be able to deliver. The Matildas, he needs to find some more solutions. He needs to build the capacity of the team up until the World Cup. That's my focus. I'm not fussed. Well, I am now that he's picked this team. They've got to win the Asian Cup, or it's a failure in my view. He's got to find some solutions, build the reservoir of players that he can call upon for the World Cup in 2023.
Andy, thanks so much for your time, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jules.